When I was a seminarian, I used to go around and give a lot of vocation talks in different parishes and schools. And in a number of these talks, I would go through the promises that priests would make. Celibacy, obedience, and the promise to pray each day five times. And a lot of times I would ask the students which they thought was the hardest promise to live out. And inevitably, most of them would raise their hands for celibacy, which is wrong. A few would say obedience, which is the correct answer. But in one talk, just one time, I had a kid who raised his hand for prayer. He said, well, the celibacy I could do, the obedience, yeah, but praying five times a day, I just couldn't do it. I said, really? He's like, yeah, I just couldn't do it. Now, I think for someone who does it, especially someone without faith in the reality of prayer, it looks really boring. You know, you see someone just kneeling there in silence, it looks like just a complete waste of time. You know, I think it's hard to concentrate and just be there in silence. And if you don't believe in that prayer does anything, it just seems like a complete waste. Mass, too, could seem the same way. Seem like a complete waste. But our readings today highlight the power of prayer. That prayer actually has real power. In our first reading, we have this scene where the Amalekites were attacking God's people. And so Moses goes up on a mountain where everyone can see him on the battlefield. And he lifts up his arms, staff in one hand, arms lifted in a posture of prayer. And as long as he's interceding and praying for the people, Israel gets the better of the fight. And the moment he puts his hands down, the enemies of God's people begin to advance. And what the Lord was trying to show his people and all the people who were out on that battlefield is that there is no victory without prayer. But prayer is what draws down the power of God into the world. So for any endeavor of ours to succeed, it has to begin with prayer. The fate of the world does not hinge upon what happens in the White House or in Congress or in the United Nations or places like that. What's far more important to the fate of the world is what happens in monasteries and convents and what happens in parish churches where the Mass is offered and where Eucharistic adoration flourishes. That's what changes the course of human history. I think that often people have a tendency, because we can see the material world, to think that there's nothing more than what we can see. But just because we can't see something doesn't mean that it's not real. And right now, there are hundreds of guardian angels in this church right now, standing guard, defending us at this very moment. And as we go to celebrate this Mass, angels of God will be ascending and descending around the altar, lifting up our prayers and the offering of bread and wine, which will become the body and blood of Christ before the throne of God in heaven. You know, there's an invisible reality around us. And our intellects and our wills, those are spirit, not material. And so when it comes to what influences our free will and our intellect, it's profoundly influenced by the spiritual powers that are around us, even though we can't see them. And so it's grace, and it's the power of prayer that has the power to transform our hearts and to guide our actions, and ultimately to guide the course of human events. A lot of people don't believe what they can't see. If we look, for example, at our presidential candidates, we have one candidate who thinks that what makes America great is financial prosperity. He thinks that if we just have enough trade deals, better tax policy, and good economics, that suddenly our nation is going to become great again. Is that what makes our nation great? Money? Well, money can be deadly if the people who have it are not rooted in virtue. Money can lead us to selfishness and greed. We have another candidate who thinks that the government can solve all of our problems, that the government is the highest power. And if we just give more money to the government and more control to the government and let the government regulate every detail of our lives, then everything will be correct. As long as she's in charge of the government, of course. But it's not money that makes a nation great. It's not a government that leads us to prosperity. It's prayer. And why is that? Because every human being is created by God to be in a relationship with God. That's how we were made. That's how we were created. So in order for us to achieve the happiness that we were created for, we have to be in a right relationship with God. And that requires prayer. You can't be in a relationship with someone that you're not talking to. Imagine the effect it would have if parents throughout our nation, in every family, got down on their knees every day and prayed the rosary for themselves and for their family. Imagine how the divorce rate would plummet and how the problems that are going on within our families would disappear. Imagine if our teachers who are teaching in our schools, imagine if every one of them prayed the rosary or meditated upon scripture each night. Imagine how that would transform their values and the values they're seeking to instill in our young people. Imagine how different our political campaigns would be if our political leaders prayed the rosary every night. Imagine how different that would be. Now, prayer is what has the power to transform the hearts of individuals and lead individuals to happiness and prosperity. And so too with nations and with the human race as a whole. In our gospel reading, Christ encourages us to be persistent in prayer. And prayer can be difficult, and it can take a lot of self-discipline, because there's no instant gratification with prayer. There's a lot of things we can do for instant gratification. You can watch a football game for instant gratification. If you like food, you can go have some ice cream for instant gratification. You instantly get what you're seeking. Prayer isn't like that at all. Sometimes you have to sit there in silence when you want to leave and you want to be doing something else, and you have to hold yourself there in the silence and face yourself and try to seek God. And so what prayer requires us to do is to strip ourselves of self-indulgence, that desire to feed ourselves with instant gratification. We have to let that go in order to enter into a life of prayer. We have to lose ourself, and we have to begin to seek our joy and happiness in someone else, in a relationship with Christ. That's why it takes so much self-discipline. And a lot of people who start praying will lose interest very quickly because they never lose that desire for self-gratification. They don't get it, so they stop praying. Other people give up praying because their prayer is too superficial, or they find prayer boring because they don't go deeply enough into it. They're still so wrapped up in themselves that they can't get beyond themselves to encounter someone else. And so it takes a lot of self-discipline, but if we persist, it pays off. You know, something that you could take for meditation and prayer, something that's unique about prayer, is at different times in our life, every one of us experiences times where we feel lonely, where our friends aren't there when we need them to be there, when we want them to be there, they're not there. And even within marriage, sometimes people experience great loneliness because when they need their spouse for something, their spouse just doesn't quite understand what's going on. Or maybe their spouse is wrapped up in something else and isn't even really paying attention and hearing what we need. And so there's times in each one of our lives where we experience loneliness and we seek someone. But when we seek Christ, He knows our desires and what's going on within us more deeply than we do. And He's there at every moment, fully present to us, if we simply turn to Him. And so what we can experience in prayer is we can experience a relationship unlike any human relationship. There's always limits to human relationships. But in a relationship with God, we can encounter someone who knows us and who we can be intimate with on a deeper level than any human being on the face of the earth. And so prayer is a relationship like no other. So I encourage you to seek that relationship in prayer. Make a commitment, if you do not have a rich life of prayer, make a commitment to get beyond the self-indulgence and to persist until you encounter a relationship unlike any other relationship you've ever experienced. That's what will transform your life. That's what will transform our nation. And that's what will transform the course of human history.